Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Macko and Cause podcast. It's Tuesday. It's another gray day in Toronto, which has kind of been every day in March, February, and April. But it doesn't matter because our hearts are full. The Maple Leafs won. Raptors taking on Orlando in game two. How you doing, Bob?
Teoscar Hernandez with the big, I think it was eighth inning home run.
Sure.
To power the Jays over the Twins, 5-3.
Hey, there they go.
There they go. Actually, it was fun. I was flipping by because there was a break in the action. Leafs were done.
Yep.
And I think it was a commercial break for some of the hockey on. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh,
let's go take a look.
Let's see what's happening here. Yeah. And it actually turned out opportune. Great moment to check it out. So last night was a fun night for Toronto sports.
It was. I know this story is going to be so unsatisfying because I will not remember any of the particulars, but some hitter for the Blue Jays got a called ball, got a ball three, thought they walked. So then they went to first, and the guy who was on first, I think it was Teoscar, got confused. He started to head to second, and they tagged him out. So that happened early in the Jays game. Gregor Chisholm, does Jays reporter for MLB.com, tweeted out about it. And I was giggling so much at that moment.
I missed that?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
And then they phoned Amir Johnson to talk about it.
Oh, my God.
Phone on the bench, Matt.
I feel so bad for Joel Embiid because he was just the secondary guy looking at it. But all our focus at first went on Joel Embiid. Like, what are you doing? Because he's sort of young and...
You can leave it there.
Yeah.
You're just sort of young.
He's a young, carefree fella. So sure. You sort of assumed it was him on the phone.
All right. Yeah. We got a lot to get to. Game of Thrones, of course.
Sam. Oh, Sam.
So much to talk about. If it wasn't for the Leafs, we would just cancel the guests and talk Game of Thrones.
Yep.
I want to ask you about Easter wines. Mm-hmm. I've got a cooking conundrum that perhaps you could help me with.
Sure.
And, of course, wraps and such. But where do you want to start with the Leafs?
Let's start by, can we do our best not to talk about contract for Mitch Marner?
Yeah, sure. It's going to be in the vicinity of 10-5.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. They're going to have to pay a guy who's really, really good. Oh!
It's interesting after the suspension how everybody shifted focus to Nazem Kadri not coming back as opposed to Jake Gardner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's
I mentioned that months ago. I said, don't be surprised if Kadri's the guy who gets moved, just because in a trade, his contract is so valuable.
It is, and that's also, I think, why he's not going anywhere, because his contract is so valuable.
Probably not, but when you have Nylander capable of playing center and you're paying him $7 million, it's hard not to just make the jump and say, look, make the guy a freaking center.
But
he's so good with Austin Matthews, but still.
Yeah, but at the same point, Nylander at his best cannot have Connor Brown and Patrick Marleau, on the
Freddie Gauthier couldn't make that work.
No, it's the problem. It's like, and listen, Nylander was an embarrassment in game two. We all know that. But if you
want... He was better last night, though.
He was better last night. But if you want him at his best... you want him on, you don't want him with those wingers.
All right, so let's start off this way.
Yeah.
And then we can break down the game in some greater detail.
Sure.
But just as games go, can we agree that was freaking fun?
Oh, yeah.
Like, sometimes you get a really close, tightly contested playoff game, and it's 2-1 or 3-2, but it doesn't feel like there's a lot of action. Everyone's playing it close to the vest. And because the stakes are so high, you go, that was really engaging.
But
it was super fun. Last night was fun.
Oh, yeah. First off, because the refs didn't, the refs did not have the whistle in the pocket, it allowed for more freewheeling hockey. It allowed for just more, both sides trading chances. You had great individual play, great moments, certainly from Frederik Andersen. Yeah, the 3-2 win was a ton of fun.
People will say that the Bergeron line didn't play that well. I don't think that's fair because the Tavares line did play so well.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of slowed them down. It's not like they were brutal. They just weren't dominant, which is the only way Boston wins is when that line's dominant. So I would say it's funny because I don't want to say Boston had a bad game. Boston did not have a bad game.
They didn't.
That
was a close game.
That was an extremely close game that could have gone either way. When they tied it up at 3-2, didn't you think to yourself, okay, I'm an adult. I can do this.
Yeah. You know what?
I was pretty freaked out.
Oh, well, there's a lot of moments. You know what's the part that annoyed me the most?
No.
Is there anything more rude in hockey than your team scores and then the other team scores almost right away? Like the Krejci goal to tie it at one. I looked at that as that was rude because the PA announcers are still announcing, you know, the goal and who got the assists. And then suddenly, you know, the TV announcer is going, and Boston scores.
That's such a great observation. That is so deflating.
Yeah.
That before, like, that's the key, right? The announcement of the goal information.
Yeah.
If the other team has scored before that comes out, it is so hard to, like, because you're already deflated and all of a sudden you hear, Leaf goal scored by.
Oh, no, you can hear the PA announcer underneath talking about who assisted Trevor Moore in that goal. And then Boston scores. Like, the fourth line scored. We're happy. Hall & Oates is still being played. And, oh, then the Bruins score.
Because if the Bruins don't score, then it's announced like, Leafs goal scored by.
Yeah.
And this time it's, Leafs goal scored by.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, it took away from it.
Such a great
So to David Krejci, I just want to say, you're rude. Could you not have waited 30 more seconds?
Right.
Give totally. Us that moment.
It's like somebody who starts eating before everybody else is served.
Yeah.
There's just a certain protocol. Yeah. You have to wait a certain amount of time, then it's okay.
Have you ever been caught where you just forgot and you took a bite and then you looked up and you realized half the table hadn't been served and you're like, and then you slowly put the fork down and try. I hope no one's noticing.
I don't forget. It's not a question of forgetting.
Okay.
I believe if you're all seated and the food is coming everyone's way, why should I have to wait? Now, if you're being served 10 minutes before everyone else, like at a restaurant, for example.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a family setting. Mm. If you're at a restaurant and your plate comes first and nobody else is being served.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait.
You got to wait.
But if there's a big, like, you know, and I'm thinking about my Italian family that I go hang out with, you know, there's 17 courses on the table.
Yeah. Don't worry. More food's coming.
And honestly, Matt, in an Italian family, nobody sits at the table at the same time. Mm-hmm. People are out having smokes. The kids are out in the yard playing. You know, it's kind of more like a Mandarin buffet where you just roll in and roll out. You can't wait or you'll be waiting for hours.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Anyway, to go back to the Leafs.
Yeah.
Was there somebody who jumped out at you last night where you say, I don't think there was one savior last night. There were too many people with good games. But if the aliens came down and you had to say, watch this one performance last night, who would you tell them to watch?
Well, then let's just get to Mitch Marner. It has to be Mitch Marner. And Andreas Janssen, best game I think he's ever played as a Maple Leaf. The Tavares line as a whole, Anderson, all these wonderful things. The fourth line,
you're ruining the spirit of the question Mitch by Marner. Naming several options.
Mitch Marner.
I actually don't agree, so I'm curious to hear your rationale.
Well, because he had a moment. We're going to, no matter what
happens. The moment.
No matter what happens in the playoffs, one thing we're going to talk about, and when they do, you know, those like season end montages, there will be Mitch Marner on the ground with his face a little too prominently in the way of the shooter, of blocking David Pastrnak near the end, you know, like 8 seconds left in a game, you know, pulled goalie, 3-2 game. That was the moment he scored. He helped set up a goal. But yeah, Mitch Marner.
And Jake Muzzin skating over and basically tossing him onto his shoulder like a fireman carry.
Yeah.
There was so much elation in that, but it was also a way to go, kid. Like, that's how you win in the playoffs.
Yeah.
From the guy who's probably best able to say that on the Leafs right now. I agree with you. And I thought what was interesting about the shot block is I have very mixed feelings about shot blocks. Because during the regular season, they just keep scoring down.
Yep.
Right? Like, if you want scoring, take away shot blocks. That'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the playoffs, there's just something. Here's what I realized is I don't want my team to necessarily be the most talented. I want my team to be the most committed. Now, maybe this is just me being shaped by Canadian culture all these years, but isn't there something so much more satisfying about the Mitch Marner shot block than just a really great snipe?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know why, but there just is.
Sacrifice. In the end, commitment. It's sacrifice. And also, there's different versions of the heroics scale of the shot block. There's when, you know, you curl up in a ball and you hope it hits your ass. And then there's him like diving forward, and you can see his face is one of the parts prominently.
His poor adolescent face.
His poor adolescent face. Yeah, so I'll give it to him. I think I said he scored. He didn't score, but he set up the Matthews power play goal, or he got that started. But yeah, so for me, Marner's first, Andreas Janssen close second.
I'll, I think for me, Tavares had the greatest night.
Mm-hmm.
The pass to Andreas Janssen between the legs was just so skilled.
Yes.
And we forget sometimes what a great hockey player is because he's such an efficient hockey player.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Kawhi Leonard that way.
Yeah.
When you're super efficient and you do small things perfectly, people tend to forget how enormously gifted you are. But Tavares's pass between the legs, it almost reminded me of, like, remember the old JVR move when he would tuck the puck between his legs, like a stick between his legs, and he would score from in close?
Yep.
Kind of reminded me of that bit of trickery.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And also, there was one Bruin, I forget who it was, fully engaged forechecking him, and then there was another Bruin a couple inches away. Like, he did that, it's not like he had time and space. He did that move while he was under heavy duress.
200 feet. That's the key. Last night, he was the master of 200 feet. You're playing the best line in hockey. You're matched up against arguably the greatest, fully complete center of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And God, like, even when they're not playing good, that Pasternak and that line is just so intimidating to watch.
Yeah.
They're so bloody good.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, Tavares and company kept them not at bay, but in check.
And, well, I mean, pretty much at certainly in check. They had seven shots, 0 points through three games, 6 points between the three of them.
And now, you think back to last year, Matty.
Well, that's part of it.
Jesus, Pasternak had what, like close to 20 points?
It was
I'm just kidding. Yeah. You know what I mean.
That first line had 20 points in the first two games.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, it was the most overwhelming thing I had seen. And that's why, you know, I was sort of bummed out, even though it went seven games last year. It just felt like, which team was overwhelming the other one? Boston was overwhelming Toronto far more last year. This year, completely different. And you're right. It's not that they don't have their moments, that Bruins first line, but the Hyman, Marner, Tavares line is slowing them down to a point where, again, even last night, you noticed Charlie Coyle more than you did anyone on the Bruins. That was remarkable.
We knew going in that the depth, even without Kadri in the lineup, which we haven't discussed, and maybe we won't even discuss because it feels like old hat. Had they lost, Kadri's suspension would be topic number one.
Yeah.
But because they won and they looked like a fairly complete team doing it, I don't feel the need to discuss Kadri. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we will, just because there's so many issues that stem from it.
Yeah.
But to your point about Charlie Coyle, who's looked great for the Bruins.
He actually has?
He's looked really, really good. You knew one or two of them would look good, but generally speaking, you trust the depth of the Leafs more than you do the Bruins.
Yeah.
But just pure star-on-star violence, give me John Tavares. He was just fantastic.
Yep.
Marner had the moment, mm-hmm. but I think Tavares had the game. And Andreas Janssen, you're totally right. Best game he ever played as a Leaf.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I appreciated on the Austin Matthews goal that made it 2-1, Andreas Janssen, he had the puck, you know, close to Rask. He could have shot it. Like, that would have been considered a high-quality, high-danger shot. But he's like, wait a minute. Oh, and then just quick pass over to Matthews. He's like, well, Matthews is better at this than I am, and I'm pretty good. And he's even more open. So I love that. Like, just the unselfishness there. It's like when a guy passes up a decent layup opportunity because he sees someone wide open for a three. That's what Andreas Janssen did there last night.
And the speed with which they do it. I think he's probably just thinking, I see the number 34. Mm-hmm. Get 34 the puck.
Yeah.
I've been watching TFC play a lot lately, and they got this new midfielder, Alejandro Pozuelo. He's terrific.
He is. I do recognize that once the playoffs are over, I'm going to have to type his name in YouTube and listen to it said about 1,000 times.
Yeah, I got to see him play live. And anyway, the point sort of being, like, you can see the team is so aware of his talent. They're just like, yeah, just get the guy the ball.
Get him the ball.
Just get them the freaking ball. And I'm sure it's that way with number 34 as well. I want to talk to you about Matthews because I threw out a poll yesterday after the Kadri suspension saying, who do you think is going to be the Leafs savior if they wind up winning?
Mm-hmm.
And I threw out Marlowe and Nylander, predictably low, even though they were the obvious substitutes for Kadri.
Yeah.
And then Kadri, Matthews and Tavares.
Yeah.
And Tavares was far and away the winner. And I thought that spoke really interestingly about how people perceive Austin Matthews in the playoffs. Not that they think he's bad or he's going to be an anchor, but when you ask the public, okay, dire situation, who's going to fix this?
Yeah.
They all said Tavares.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
It is interesting. And it's also correct. It's the right answer because Tavares has done all the defensive things you need. He's gone full Jonathan Toews, you know, just doing the defensive things, doing all, like, full cliche alert, all the little things you got to do to win.
Is he playing heavy hockey, Matt?
He's playing heavy hockey, Bob. He is playing heavy, heavy hockey. These cliches are there for a reason. Sometimes they work. Yeah, Matthews is...
He looked much better last night than he did in the first two games. And it wasn't just the goal. He seemed more engaged. Mm-hmm. And that's probably because Andreas Janssen was so engaged.
Yeah.
It's hard to fly when you're surrounded by turkeys, as they say.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kapanen really just hasn't found... He's fast, but right now he's just basically a fast guy with a mediocre wrist shot.
Yeah.
That's what he feels like out there.
Right yeah. Everything looks great until it's time to shoot.
Yeah.
You know, until it's time to score. Like, everything else... You know, you see the speed and you see, like, the best thing that Kapanen does is he reminds everyone how slow Zdeno Chara is. Because there always seems to be at least once a game where he's going to beat you down for the icing.
And Hyman dumped him last night,
Hyman
too.
Hyman did that as well, yeah.
I just, like, every time someone knocks down Chara, it feels like watching Ali post 35. Mm-hmm. Where you just remember, yeah, this could never have happened before. And he's still in there, and I still respect him, and he's the GOAT and all that.
Yep.
But, you know, or like the Godfather in Salazzo. Mm-hmm. You know, Godfather, you know, rest his soul. You know, he's getting a little slow.
Yeah.
Tom, could I have gotten to him 10 years ago?
Good Paul.
Thank you.
My reference was going to be Predator. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Kill it.
That was going to be mine.
He's probably closer to Predator in size. I wanted to mention the Matthews thing. I thought it was interesting because I feel like he needed that goal last night.
Oh yeah, you saw the relief in him.
Yeah,
it was a little extra hooray when he scored it.
I'm sure he went into this game thinking, "I've got to be the guy."
Well, to truly be elite, it's unfair because process versus result. You know, sometimes you do everything right and you don't score. That's hockey. But playoffs, you're getting paid this money. You've got the skill and talent to be a top four player in the NHL. At some point, give me the counting stats. You know, take analytics and shove it up your ass. I'm going to need goals and assists. You know, and simple as that. And, you know, and he got it. And it was a great shot.
You can make the underlying numbers argument that Freddie Gauthier has been a good fourth line center. But in the end,
yeah,
you want, like, the Kyle Lowry plus 11 for the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, not as disastrous a game as it appeared.
Yeah.
But you got to score.
Got to score.
At least a little.
Yeah.
I want to name check somebody that I was thinking about last night with Matthews.
Sure.
Because Austin Matthews has the physical gifts to be one of the top two or three players in hockey.
Yes.
And his best nights, he's that now.
Yes.
But he's not always having his best nights.
Nope.
And it doesn't feel like he's really learned how to be a superstar always.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about Nathan MacKinnon. Mm. Nathan MacKinnon's in his sixth season now, and he is always unstoppable now.
Yeah.
99 points on the season, and he looks amazing against the Flames.
Yep.
He's always unstoppable. And people looked at his game for a long time and said, "Guy, he's so fast, he's so skilled, and, you know, he won the Calder." And it's not like they said MacKinnon's a bum. And I think Matthews is better now than MacKinnon was when his career started.
Yeah.
Certainly numbers-wise. But I think maybe his arc will be similar in that by the time you get to about year four or five for Matthews, he will figure out how to be always unstoppable, but he's not there yet.
No, he's not. He's not. It's funny. The ceiling for Matthews is higher than Marner, even if ever so slightly.
Size.
But Marner's been the Leafs' best player for the last 2 years.
Yep.
But yes.
And Tavares is now their most important player.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's just... again, Gold Star, Kyle Dubas, Muzzin and Tavares. You want to know one of the biggest differences this year and last year? Muzzin and Tavares.
Isn't that something?
It is. Like
Gold Star. Kylie D.
Yeah, yeah. Something tells me Mike Babcock isn't talking about how they need to do more to fix the depth on the team. Like he was saying, like his little passive-aggressive shots in March.
Muzzin's been great. Yeah. Okay, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you want to do Leafs all the way through or do you want to pepper it throughout?
No, pepper it throughout.
Okay, so I want to talk Muzzin, but we'll come to it in a moment.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about Easter Wine, Matt.
Yeah.
Because I've made a very important decision and you're probably the only person I know who can help me.
Yeah.
I think I might want to try drinking wine.
Yeah.
I've never really been a wine drinker.
Mm-hmm.
I have had wine. On the bleachers
yep.
at Ravina Park.
Yeah. Probably not the best wine.
You know, it was called Blue Moody. And
yes.
It was like blueberry wine, and the label actually looked like a fake denim patch with stitching.
Yeah, oh, God. There's some good, bad. Blue Nun, Black Tower.
Kelly's. Kelly's Sipping Wine. Kelly's, you ever heard of that
yes.
one?
Yes. These are all horrible and wonderful wines. Sometimes those wines get people into wine.
Okay, so, well, I think that's the case for me.
Yeah.
It also got me into bed late on a Saturday night, yep. well into Sunday morning. Next week, do a top five worst wines.
Sure.
But for this week, I need an Easter wine because yep. I'm doing my cleanse. It wraps up on Sunday.
Yep.
It's gone pretty good.
Yeah.
I've lost about, you know, 8-10 pounds, whatever it
nice.
Is. You know, feeling good. And I'm going to ruin that
yeah.
with a nice big bottle of wine. So yeah. what's a good Easter break the fast wine?
Now, let me first say why I think you would be good for wine or why you'd appreciate wine. If you just ignore, you know, sometimes the douchebaggery elitist things.
That, like your Instagram feed, which is getting better.
You saw my one with
I did the Beastie Boys reference.
The Beastie Boys reference with a bottle of Chateau Neuf de Pape.
And you saw that I appreciated it?
Yes.
Okay,
yes, I did.
Good.
Yeah. But wine is so much of it, like, is about history, geography, science, you know, and there is something fascinating going, why the same grapes in the same plot, why does it taste so much different in this year versus last? Then you know what you do? You talk to a farmer.
By the way, Matt, that's known as terroir.
Yes. Oh, is that what it's called?
Apparently.
Yes.
I've heard you use it a bunch of yeah. times.
And you talk to a farmer and you ask the farmer, why? I'm like, well, we had rain on these days, so we had to, you know, we had to pick early, or, you know, the sun and just all, or wind, all these little factors. It's like wine is fascinating beyond the douchiness of it. It's the science and the history that goes with it.
Do you want to take this opportunity to promote your wine podcast in case people don't know about
Ooh,
it?
Ooh, the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Yeah, you can find it in all the same places on this one. It's basically me interviewing different people from the world of wine, from famous, like, celebrity winemakers and to bartenders and chefs and things like that.
I've never listened,
mm-hmm.
but maybe now I'll start.
Maybe you start.
Listen to one. Getting into wine.
Listen to one with Jay Onright. It was fun.
Okay, that one I could.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to that one. But okay, getting back to Easter. You're going to be doing like turkeys or things like that. Like what?
Ham.
What are we? Ham.
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 To borrow from 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Ham.
Working on the night. Oh no, night cheese. It was night cheese, but ham is also prominently featured with Liz Lemon. I'm going to go like. First off, you can never go wrong with Pinot Noir.
Okay, Pinot Noir. I'd like to go under 25 if I could.
Okay. Under 25, so we're going to have to get rid of a lot of France.
Actually, no, wait. Under 30.
Okay,
because under 30. I'm going to somebody's house.
Yeah.
And maybe what I'll do is I'll bring it as a gift and pour myself a glass.
Okay. I'm going to go one of two ways. One with Pinot Noir, and there's an area called Côte Chalonnais.
How do you spell that? Côte?
C-O-T-E.
Yep.
Chalonnais is like C-H-A-L-O-N... N-A-I-S-E. I'm going to put this...
Like mayonnaise.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to put this in like real estate terms. Where that's located, they're about 20 kilometers or so south of Burgundy. And Burgundy's got the most expensive Pinot in the world. No one can afford it. It's really pricey. But if you just go 20 minutes south, suddenly it's still great soil, great land, and Pinot Noir made by really smart people, but the land's less expensive, so the wine is less expensive. So see about finding a Pinot Noir from that area. I'll email you some other ones. Now, the one other suggestion.
They have to be things that I can get at the Parkdale LCBO. And let's not forget, they carry Kelly's.
Yeah, okay, I'll take a look at the website. Okay, two other things. One, don't be afraid of Merlot. You're having ham. You know, so have Merlot. It's a nice, opulent red wine. It'll go well with the ham.
This may shock you, Matt, but I'm not actually afraid of Merlot.
No. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'm okay with it.
It just gets a bad rap. And finally, you know, if you want to bring something to celebrate,
mm-hmm.
I've talked about it before, and you'll find it at the Parkdale one, get a bottle of Cremant. C-R-E-M-A-N-T. It is sparkling wine made pretty much the same way as champagne. Doesn't age as long, but it's only like $19, $18, and it tastes a lot better than a lot of the cheap Prosecco that's in Toronto.
Cool. Is it like Cava that way?
I'd say it's even better than Cava. I would say that it is one step above Cava.
Well, I'm definitely going to get a bottle of Cremant because my wife loves a good Prosecco.
Yeah.
And if this is a way to get the experience of a good Prosecco for a little less cash.
Well, no. It'll be about $5 more expensive than Prosecco.
What? You son of a bitch.
But it'll be $10 more tasty.
Oh, okay. Well, I like that math.
Yeah.
$5 more, but $10 better taste.
There you go.
That's a good selling point.
There you go.
Anything you want to get to now, Maddie? Thank you for your help.
Not a problem at all. Do we want to do a little bit of rappies?
I kind of do, but I kind of don't.
Okay, I'll just say this.
How did you react?
I just disappointed because it's another game one loss. Another game, like just 8 out of the last 9, they've lost game one. It is infuriating.
When the ball left DJ Augustine's hands, did you think, of course, it's going to go in?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. But as for Kyle Lowry, yeah, he does have to score. But wow, are the Raptors so different when he's on the court than off? I mean, the biggest storyline for me was the two times where he took big breaks in the second, the fourth quarter, Orlando went on these huge runs. It's so weird. And I know, Paul Pierce was ripping Lowry and saying that's just regular season Lowry and there's no playoff.
That could be carryover from Paul Pierce versus Lowry back in the day. But
yeah,
maybe
but
not.
Just a little bit of shout out that, I don't want Lowry to not shoot. If he's wide open, shoot. Don't. Because if you don't, if you're afraid to shoot, then it's going to be 4-on-5 offensively.
In years past, if he didn't score 20 or thereabouts, they were going to lose.
Yeah.
Now he can score 10 and just distribute the ball and rebound because he's tough and take a couple charges and do all those Kyle Lowry things.
Yes.
They're not the same team anymore. They've got 2 scoring options that are better than him, maybe even 3, depending on how you look at Gasol.
Yeah.
So the fact that he didn't score is, to me, almost just weird.
Yeah.
Like a John Starks kind of keep clanging kind of night.
Yeah.
Although he didn't go 3-for-18.
Yeah, he didn't go as bad as, as Starks.
Starks
did.
Is famous
for yeah, him. I know.
It wasn't like Houston missing, against Golden State last year.
Yeah. Oh, God. No, it's
game
none
7.
Of that.
It wasn't that.
No.
He was 0-for-7. That's a bad night.
He was 0-for-7. Some of them were wide open shots, which is the only infuriating part. But to me, the worst part of that game was, I love Pascal Siakam. He shouldn't have 24 shots. And he should not be playing more minutes than Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard played 33 minutes in a game where the Raptors never led by more than like 6 or 7. Like that to me is the shocking. I don't think they ever once led by double digits. And to me, that's on Nick Nurse. You got to get Kawhi Leonard has got to be close to 40 minutes. You had 5 days off. You got 2 games off between game 1 and 2. You got another 2 days off between games 2 or 3. There's ever a time to hit that magic 40 number. That was on Saturday.
So I guess sports guys love to talk about how right they are, especially when they were right.
Yeah, it's fun.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know me.
Yeah.
I am not ashamed to compliment myself when necessary.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Not compliment myself, but let's just say I have confidence that my opinions are probably worth listening to.
Yeah.
In the sports thing, I never got off on the, well, you hear what I said and all that, because it strikes me as kind of blowhardism. But yeah. I will say, a couple pods ago, I said, watch out for Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
A couple pods ago, I said, I don't know if Kadri's long for this team.
Uh-huh.
And a couple pods ago, several times, I said, Nick Nurse, I'm not convinced.
Bob was right. Now, would you have predicted, if someone came to you and said, Bob, Columbus, Tampa, game 1. How do you see the series going?
I thought Columbus, if I'm being totally, totally, totally honest, if it was my money, I probably would have put it on Tampa Bay.
Of course, every human being would have.
Right. But I did think it was going to go 7.
And, really?
Oh, yeah. No, honestly, I thought Columbus had a really good chance to win this because Columbus is that team right now. Kind of like we're facing with the Raptors in Orlando. There's always that team when you look at the numbers and you go, oh, son of a gun, over the last 8 weeks, they've been great. And you're catching them just at that time. We talked about this 2 pods ago.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be that team that's got the momentum going in?
I am rooting so hard for Tampa to win the next 4. Because if Columbus wins, A, so much star power is gone. Yes, we get Tortorella sound, which is great. But doesn't it invalidate the entire regular season when it's like this team which set like a tied for wins, number 1 scoring, number 1 power play, number 1 penalty kill, 30 more points than the Columbus Blue Jackets, beat Columbus all 3 times by a combined score of like 17-3. Well, doesn't matter. They just got swept.
It's funny you say that because hockey we love because it's so egalitarian. The eight can really push the one.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of basketball, which is totally a meritocracy.
Yeah.
But there's something about team play that allows good teams to shut down great teams in hockey.
Yeah.
The good part is you get these amazing stories. The bad part is you don't get to enjoy the superstar team.
You don't get
in the same way.
The NBA, like if I'm going full Goldilocks, the NBA is on one end. There's too much dominance from a couple teams. The NHL too often has a little too much egalitarianism. I need something in the middle. I like the odd upset.
I think football's pretty good for that.
Football's perfect for
it. You know, football is usually about 50% old hands and 50% new faces.
Except for the Patriots.
Except
for the Patriots. But I like a certain amount of it. But in hockey right now, I'm like, no, I want Tampa to move on. And think about just...
It'd be a great story.
It'd be a great story if they came back and won the next four games. That, to me, would be a great story. It's like, hey, Columbus, good job, tip of the cap. Let all four games be one-goal games to go into overtime. But think about how's the NHL feeling, seeing that Crosby, Malkin, you know, Kessel, Letang, you know, Kucherov, Stamkos, Braden Point, Victor Hedman, Vasilevsky. Like, we're talking about guys who are going to win a lot of awards, and they're going to be gone before April 20th. That's all possible.
That's a great question, because I don't know that people outside, I don't know that those players are loved. Crosby, for sure.
Yeah.
Crosby, absolutely. Malkin, also. The Pens, because they spent so much time on NBC.
Yeah.
I think that the nation understands them, but I don't think America's been captivated by the Lightning in any way. Even the hockey fan. They're kind of a quiet team in a way. I know that sounds really weird, but think about how great that regular season was. We don't really talk about them the same way we talked about like those Mike Keane and Chicago teams that were winning President's trophies. Like, there's just something missing about it.
Yeah. Also, you know that, like, I hate the fact that hockey is the only sport that has the curse of winning. Uh-oh, they won the President's Trophy. They're in trouble. Like, think about that for a second. Teams almost want to avoid being great and winning games. In basketball, it's, the team that got the most wins, they're at least going to the finals, you know, and we always acknowledge, well, it's Golden State. You know, they won all those games. They're going to go and win. And in hockey, it's like, don't win all those games. It'll come back to bite you in the ass.
Tall poppy syndrome. If you don't believe that tall poppy syndrome exists in Canada, the fact is you don't even want to be the best team going into the playoffs.
Don't want to be
because it'll just screw you.
And the Capitals, they got to be feeling pretty good. I know they lost to Carolina, but they're saying, oh, Pittsburgh, are you gone? Oh, Tampa, are you gone? And, you know, I think Washington's going to beat Carolina. Like, oh, defending champs. We know how to do this. We've been here before.
Okay, so I want to ask you about Ovi in just 1 second. Yeah. So can we put the Raptors to bed and say
yes.
It's either going to be 5 or 6?
Yeah.
And the Raptors will win?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ovi dummies Svechnikov. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people afterwards said that it was inappropriate because he's a vet.
Yeah.
He's got 40 pounds on him. Mm-hmm. The kid's not a fighter.
Yep.
And he's 19 years old.
Yeah.
But by everybody's account, the kid also challenged Ovi and drew him into the fight. Now,
yes.
Ovechkin was also giving him the stick and tapping him and all that. And Svechnikov turns around, basically says, you want to go? You want to go? And Ovi takes the challenge and drops him.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
Fine.
Yeah, me too.
I'm fine with it. Like, you hate, you know, like just when you see that one punch and you see him go down, you feel bad for him now just because, you know, we just know more about stuff like that. But he challenged him to a fight. And also because it's a 50-goal scorer, I sort of give you a bit of a pass. Like, you know, if you went and challenged, if he'd done that to, like Zdeno Chara or something, then I'm like, okay, Chara, be nice. Okay, be nice to him. But as Ovechkin, he's in his early 30s. He's played a lot of hockey. He's a grizzled fella. If you want to challenge to a fight, whatever happens, that's on you.
You want to hear how obsessive the Toronto sports mentality can be? Mm. When that happened, you know what I thought of?
What?
Ooh, they're going to want Nazem Kadri. The Carolina Hurricanes. Because they're going to want to be tougher to protect their stars.
You went to Kadri.
I went to Kadri in my mind. I thought, that team has danced so long. And you know how teams, this works, right? Like, you start with one deal, and 2 years later, you wind up doing some completely different deal. But you just opened up the Slack channel, and you know, you start throwing out some ideas. Next thing you know, you land somewhere else. I looked at it and I said, they don't need more D. The Leafs need right D. Yeah. They need scoring, and now they're going to feel they need toughness. Kadri's perfect for it. Kyle Dubas, get on the phone.
Get on the phone. Make that deal. That's so Toronto-centric.
Isn't it crazy?
By the way, one other point.
Yeah.
The Columbus Blue Jackets have never won a playoff series ever, and they're about to beat a team that wins multiple playoff rounds every year and tie the record for wins. Again, crazy.
Okay, so...
Meanwhile, back over, sir.
You know how I was saying how I'm always right? Mm. I think... Now let's talk about some of the many ways in which I'm often wrong.
Okay.
I think I've been wrong about John Tortorella, and maybe a lot of us have been. Because the consensus is he's kind of an old school coach,
yeah,
and he doesn't embrace new thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like in the playoffs, his teams really perform well.
They do. Yeah.
You know, Rangers. I mean, just go down the line. Like, there's this willingness to, I don't know, there's just something.
Tampa won a Stanley Cup. Who was their coach?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and if I'm an owner, do I really care about the regular season?
Well, we'll find out tonight. We'll find out tonight if we care about the regular season.
Yeah, fair enough. Oh. I don't know. I just started thinking to myself, maybe we need to revisit John Tortorella. Like, they did a great job, Jarmo Kekäläinen, bringing in Nemat Duchene and,
yep,
and the, you know, convincing and not getting rid of the other two guys, which they could have done. Like, the decisions they made, they've clearly panned out for him, and that's fun. And awesome.
Yeah.
But maybe Tortorella deserves some credit here that he just doesn't get.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we go and look at the montage of moments of the first round of the playoffs, the Mitch Marner face, you know, the block
the
shots
block, will be there. Yeah.
But also the Tortorella, you know, after the first period when they're down 3-0 in game one, his speech to the team, you know.
Right.
That'll be, they'll mix that in, make sure to beep it. But
because
be
that speech is the opposite of analytics.
Yeah.
That is the opposite of analytics.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the coach looks at the rest of his players and says, we're not going to be afraid of these guys.
Yeah.
We're going to toughen up.
Yeah.
We're going to do it right. It's, yeah, like it's like the speech from Samuel L. Jackson in Deep Blue Sea.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to fight anymore.
Man, I thought you were going to go Al Pacino from Any Given Sunday, but you went with Samuel L. Jackson. Didn't work out well for Samuel L. Jackson.
No, next thing
spoiler happened, alert, he gets eaten by a shark. Yeah, pretty violent.
So that's the opposite of saying, oh, well, you know, I've got a guy on his ELC who's contributing nicely on the third line, and in my fourth line actually drives possession numbers, and we're at about 53%, which is outstanding. And no, it's like he looked at his team and yelled at them and said, do better.
Do better, yeah. He said, do better in a very creative way, and it worked.
I think I might love that.
Yeah.
I've spent like the last 10 years of my life trying to learn the new math, and now maybe I just want a guy in a suit who yells.
You know, you want a little of everything. You want a little bit of everything here. I want, you know, the analytics stuff you use, but then every now and then I'm like, get out of here, nerds. It's time for me to toughen up the team.
Well, that's the thing why we love to go back to the Marner shop lock, which has been the, you know, idée fixe throughout the whole podcast so far.
May we.
Is we love it because he's small.
Yeah.
And this team was not supposed to be tough.
Yeah.
Nylander hasn't played that tough. Matthews is big. But he's not really a physical presence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the littlest guy.
Yeah.
Little tiny Tim.
Wee little. Yeah, exactly. Like, if it was Gauthier doing it, I'm like, all right, there you go. You better do that.
I watched Gauthier hit somebody the other day and I almost jumped off the couch. I was so excited. It's like you're built like a tank.
Yeah.
Go smash somebody.
Yep. You know what gets me excited, Bob?
Oh, go for it, Matt. I don't know, but I have a feeling it's either got live concert experience or the legal affairs of our podcast attached to it.
No, what makes me excited is fiscal responsibility, but in a way that allows for, you know, for children to be fed and for a proper educational system. I don't know what you're talking about. But, I mean, Bob, okay, you brought it up. I guess I'll go there. If you guys out there listening, if you need a lawyer, you should use ours. His company, and his name is Jeff Pollock. It's a small law firm, but it's a damn good law firm. You won't be intimidated, and you'll feel like, well, it does not even feel like it. You will be cared for. He is fantastic. And if you want to get a hold of him, jeffpollock.com. We use him. And you check that box off in your life about, I'll never have to worry about anything involving the law again because I got Jeff on my side and he's a super nice guy and he's damn good at his job. 416-777-0088. That number again, 416-777-0088. jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. And while we're here, Sea Giant, We got two sponsors, SeatGiant.ca, Canadian-owned operated company. Use the discount code Bob and Matt. You save some money. Also, all the tickets are in Canadian dollars, so no American shenanigans going on. You know exactly what you're going to pay, and they guarantee every ticket to be legitimate, and they stand behind their customer experience. SeatGiant.ca, discount code Bob and Matt. You save some money. We get a little, which is good, because hosting the podcast, it ain't free. It costs some money.
So, Maddie, yep. How much time do we have left in the pod?
We have about 17 minutes.
Not enough time.
Well,
do you want to go back to the Leafs? Do you want to do something non-sporty? Do you want to go not hockey or basketball Toronto-centric?
Well,
what do you want to do?
I feel like we should do a little Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And also, shout out to Colton Orr. I was interviewing Colton Orr about a week ago for the show that I do on TSN. And I don't know how, but Game of Thrones came up. Actually, I do know how. I'm me. You know, eventually things are going to come up. And he was excited about it. And so, you know, we started talking a little bit of Game of Thrones on air. And I actually asked him, hey, do you want to come on Monday and just do Game of Thrones? And if it wasn't for the Kadri hit, it would have just been. And he was so geeked out and was so excited to do it. Like, sometimes, you know, you have a guest on and like, yeah, I'd love to come back. And they don't hear from them for like 6 months. This was the exact opposite. And I never thought I'd be in a place where I'm discussing, you know, Sam Graywell, or I forget his last name, with Colton.
Samwell Orr. Tarly?
Samwell Tarly, thank you, with Colton Orr.
All fun. Right, so what did one half of the infamous Orr-McLaren fourth line blue bomber duo, what were his hot takes on Game of Thrones?
He is excited for it.
Well, we're all excited. What are his takes?
Yeah, it was takes with just that Sam is... Sam's a bit of a shit disturber.
You think Sam was stirring it up because he was mad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Do you agree with that take? I think he was upset. He found his brother had just been executed.
I know.
By the way, F the spoiler alerts. Like, we're going to talk Game of Thrones.
Yeah, if you want, here, Bob, give an early cha-cha-cha. Okay, so now we're doing spoiler talk with Game of Thrones. Yes, Sam became the central figure, and you felt so bad for him. Because one moment, he's having a happy time with a princess. I'm sorry, I stole some books. Ha, 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 Sam, what a cad. Oh, by the way, I murdered your father and your brother. And, you know, like, oh my God.
It's true, we went from library finds to your family's dead.
And I murdered them.
They would not bend the knee.
That was intense. Like I got emotional bends. I'm like, aha, everything's good. Oh, everything's not good. Like, just so quickly.
And then he goes out and sees creepy Bran, whose comic takeaways. Now, the cutaway to Bran just staring at people like, that's got to be a meme if it isn't.
Oh, it is.
Okay, good.
Oh, Bran, everyone just sit there.
He's, so funny.
Yeah.
So funny. And he's like, okay, you got to go tell him. Yeah. And you want Sam to just look at him and say, now. You want me to go tell the guy he's the true king of the seven kingdoms now.
Yeah. Here's my number one takeaway from it all.
Okay. And
I was discussing this with Colton, is that incest has been so normalized on the show. We don't even blink an eye to the fact that Jon Snow is having sex with his aunt. We're only concerned about how it affects who should be on the throne. Like, we're more concerned about the politics of power than we are with the fact that we're now totally okay with aunt and her nephew making out all over the place.
We got used to it from episode one when brother and sister were together, Kingslayer and Cersei.
Yeah.
So I think, one, there's Greek mythology. We all grew up.
Yeah.
My daughter loves Greek mythology.
Mm.
She's getting older and things are harder to explain.
Yeah.
Wait, Zeus and Hera are brother and husband and wife? Look, honey, the important thing is Hercules is strong.
Yeah.
And
Zeus throws lightning bolts.
But also, like, I kind of like, this is a choice that they made as a show.
Yeah.
That they were going to make
Pro incest.
Yeah. They're going to make it historically accurate in the sense that families did some not good things to keep the bloodlines pure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so...
It's even, like, why are we talking about this? I'm just grossed out right now.
It's just
You're
funny.
Grossing me out.
It's just funny. It's like, I don't care about that. Let's focus on the task at hand.
Can we take a quick bounce over from disgusting things to things that were kind of shocking in a way?
Cersei saying, kill my brothers. Here's the crossbow. Like, so she no longer loves Jaime? Also, she's not pregnant, is she?
I don't think so.
So she faked it. She faked it the whole time to fool Tyrion, you know, didn't drink the wine and kept holding her tummy so Tyrion would believe that she was cool with all the army going to fight in the north. She faked her pregnancy.
We don't know that, but she did have the meaningful, lingering look to, you know, off camera, kind of side glance.
Yeah, and she was drinking wine in this episode.
And how.
And how, and what's that?
What do you think she drinks?
Oh, well, let's see. She's in the south, so it's a warmer climate. So that's going to be like that's going to be like a more full-bodied, higher alcohol, probably like a Brambley dark cherry sort of wine. Good tannins, I would say. Hopefully, there's enough freshness and acidity to keep it together.
She seems pretty acid.
What's
and,
that?
And she seems pretty acidic and pretty together.
Yeah,
so
she
there
does.
You go. You know what she reminded me of a bit? Mm. She needs somebody to play with because everyone's gone.
Yeah.
Now there's only this idiot with the boats.
Yeah.
Right? And he's,
no one likes him.
Like, you know, he's an idiot and yeah. Like she's going to chew him up. She's going to pencil sharpener that guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So she's starting to remind me a bit of Betty Draper.
Mm.
You know, like she's stuck at home
in
King's Landing.
Yeah.
And everybody's gone out and she's just like got too much spare time.
Yeah.
Although what I love about her, though, and this is so great, and God bless the writers. They did. I mean, she's amazing, the actress, Lena Headey, but they've broken through the wall. Her one answer?
Good.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like just one word, and you're like, oh, my God, Cersei is a boss.
She is so evil. Like, everything is being set up for. She's like, okay, you guys all kill each other, then I'll kill the rest of y'all, and then I'll go move on an island or something.
I don't know if she is the best character in the show, because I don't know if this show can have a best character.
Yeah.
But I will say I enjoy her scenes more than anybody else's on average.
You know which ones I also like? You know, like in comic books when they would do crossover, when people would cross to different universes?
Totally.
I love like Tyrion with Sansa when he said, a great deal of people underestimated you. Most of them are now dead. I love that line. And then when she's like,
oh, there was the wedding and she said, it had its moments.
Yeah, it had
that
its moments.
That was so good.
And then Sansa going, wait, you trust Cersei? I used to think you were the smartest man in the world.
Yeah. That was actually so great.
That was a great scene.
Have you noticed that Tyrion, season by season, is getting more and more marginalized? Hmm. Like, he was the smartest man
he
in
was,
King's Landing.
Yeah.
He was this guy who was just, you even remember when he was the Hand, and he made his speech about how, I don't know why, but I just happen to be brilliant at this stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel very brilliant these days. He just tells jokes with Varys about Varys having no nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was fun still, but.
I guess.
By the way.
Comic relief.
I'm getting to Bran, and I know we got to wrap this up soon, but can Bran just do something than just staring, telling people what to do, and reminding everyone, I'm not your brother, I'm not this, I'm not that. Just do something, Bran.
It's a bit like Leonard Nimoy in the monorail episode of The Simpsons when he said, you know, he keeps saying things like, the cosmic dance has begun.
Yeah.
And they said, well, my work here is done.
Yeah.
And the guy says to Leonard Nimoy, but you didn't do anything. And his answer,
didn't I?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And before that, I think it was the cosmic ballet continues. And the guy's sitting next to him, does anyone want to change seats?
Okay, quickly, because there's so much to get through here.
Yeah.
Was it weird seeing nudity again on Game of Thrones?
It was a welcome addition back to it.
Okay.
After a bunch of years, like, well, we've won Emmys and now we're now we're respected. The nudity goes away. It was nice to have the nudity back.
The symmetry with the first episode from season one was brilliant. The fact that they had the kid climbing up the tree, which was like Bran looking at all the people rolling into Winterfell in the first episode. Like there were so many nice parallels. You know that I was very suspicious based on season seven, whether season eight would be good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a fantastic episode, and I am so geeked out for what's to come.
Agreed.
All right, how much time do we have left?
We got about 8 minutes.
All right. Let's do, do you want to do more Leafs, or do you want me to ask you about Russell Wilson?
Ooh, Russell Wilson real quick. I mean, we don't see that, where the quarterback says, if we don't get it done here, then I'm not re-signing. Like, and now he's like going to be the highest paid player in the NFL for about 18 minutes before the next like Matt Stafford contract comes up. I'm bummed out. I was hoping that somehow they could have traded him to the Giants. You heard those rumors of Russell Wilson coming to New York. I'm not going to lie to you, Bob. I think I peed a little at the idea of Russell Wilson coming to the Giants. But
did you actually think it might happen?
No.
No, but there was no way. Can he be the face of the league?
Yes.
I think so, too.
Absolutely can. Do you know why? Because, like, Brady, he's getting near the end, and there's there's always going to be polarization of Brady.
Rodgers probably has 3 to 5 years.
But Rodgers also has all those issues, you know, like, oh, yeah, do his teammates hate him? Do they like him? Like, and then what's
the Bleacher Report article killed him.
The Bleacher Report. But before that, what's going on with his parents? Like, you know, is that him? Is that his parents? Like, Russell Wilson has the most clean image. You know, winner, damn good at his job, celebrity wife. They're a good-looking couple, and he's never done anything really controversial.
He's on the God Squad, so you know he's not going to screw up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or if he screws up, it's not going to be, you know, TMZ screw-ups.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, God Squad has
their own good screw-ups. Point, yeah. I suppose anyway. That doesn't make you bulletproof.
Anyway.
Okay, yeah. So let's get back to the Leafs.
Yeah.
Okay. We got two very important issues that we haven't discussed.
Yep.
One is a cooking issue that I need you to resolve, and the other one is a Leaf issue.
Okay, we'll do the Leaf issue first.
All right.
But you thought I was going to say cooking.
I did. But we'll do the Leafs quickly. We can just fly through this. Babs, do you believe that by the end of this series, Marlowe will wind up on the fourth line?
No, I don't. Should he? Yes. Like, you talk about Tyrion's being marginalized, Marlowe should be marginalized.
Babs, his decision to go with Muzzin and Zaitsev to try and match them on the Marchand lane.
It's worked.
Yep. It's probably the most important decision of the entire series.
Keeping the Tavares line on that line. Great. Embracing Marner as a penalty killer. Great. There's all these good things. Babcock's a good coach. But the loyalty to Marlowe is wildly confusing.
And it almost cost them when he idiotically put him out there along with Connor Brown, a pairing that should never be together.
Because
all the stats in the world show that they are not well suited to play with anybody, never mind Freddie Gauthier, with 5 minutes left in a one-goal game.
Should never be on the ice.
Almost cost them. Yeah. So as much as I think Babcock has done a pretty terrific job coaching for the most part, it seems like this is his one Achilles heel, is he can't look at Patrick Marlowe, one of the truly great players of this generation, and say, I think I need you to bump down.
Yeah. If Patrick Marlowe had a different name, you know, and was the same age and weight and size and speed and skill level, but it just wasn't Patrick Marlowe, there's no way he is on that third line. No way he's getting those minutes. No way he's in the game with 5 minutes to go. At 5 minutes to go, he should be, you know, just be stuck on the bench.
I was happy Tyler Ennis drew in the absence of Nazem Kadri, though, because he has played really well. And that was also another good pickup by Dubas. Just a vet with a little bit more left in the tank who's done a good job. Okay, so let's move past the Leafs because I know you're going to need time for this.
Yeah.
So yesterday I was making asparagus. And I was boiling the water to put the asparagus
in. I saw the tweet.
Okay. So for people who haven't seen it, I was cooking the asparagus, and I realized I also wanted a hot dog. Mm-hmm. And I had one hot dog left in the fridge. So I put, and by the way, it's a chicken dog. So it's really stretching the definition of my cleanse, but I needed it.
Yeah.
And I also didn't want to wait for another pot to boil. So the boiling water was there. So, and the asparagus had just been put in. I thought, F it, I'm going to do it. And I put the hot dog in with the asparagus.
Yeah.
Is it wrong?
Yeah, it's wrong. It's wrong because just your patience. You couldn't, like, all you needed was a couple more minutes. Like, nope. I mean, it's not like you were having this great ambrosia of the gods of food. It's a chicken dog. But you couldn't wait. Oh, I can't wait an extra 3 minutes for this chicken dog. So you're going to put it in. I'm sorry, Bob. I don't want to take this a turn for the racial. I'm not for segregation, but I am for it when it comes to my asparagus water and then boiling my chicken dog. No.
Was interesting about this was because both of those waters wind up very flavored.
Yes.
Like hot dog water, very pungent.
Yes, it
asparagus
is.
Water, very pungent.
Yeah.
And I wondered, would there be cross blending of tastes?
That's disgusting. How did it taste?
It was fine. Yeah. I guess because they're both strong enough on their own that they could stand up to the test of someone sharing their space.
Yeah.
And it made me think, I'm going to do this more often. Like when I'm boiling eggs, why don't I just throw other stuff in there too?
Sure.
Why not?
No.
What's the worst that's going to happen?
Just get another pot and put some water
in. But it was boiling already and I was hungry then.
You were hungry then. I blame your cleanse. Your cleanse is gone to you. We're like, I need this chicken dog right now.
God, I was
no one needs a chicken dog.
I was so hungry. I decided to somehow do a total carb. Like, I don't need any carbs.
Yeah.
And I'm doing intermittent fasting at the same time.
Yeah.
which has left me quite hungry.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, that would.
It's pretty, pretty.
How's your Sunday going to be?
Oh, so good. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to remember it. I'm going to drink some of the stuff you told me. What's it called? Yeah. Chateau Charlenois.
No.
Charlenais.
Oh, one other one to throw on. I was thinking about it. If you can find some North, like Hawke's Bay, which is in New Zealand. Hawke's Bay.
Is that a white or a red?
Red. Oh, well, that's an area. But Hawke's Bay, which is a region in North Island in New Zealand, they do some really good like Merlots and Malbecs and things like that. Like they'll do a blend, like what's called a Bordeaux blend. And you can get some good stuff around $25 as well. So that I think that would go great with your ham.
Okay, great. And as you know, I'm not adverse to blends.
Yeah.
Seeing as how I blended hot dogs and asparagus.
Oh, God.
Predictions on game three. Game four.
Game four, Boston. This feels like it's just going, no one's winning two in a row in this series. That's what it feels like to me.
I would be shocked if Brad Marchand didn't do something stupid to Freddie Anderson.
Oh.
That he gets away with, and then the Leafs have to make the tough decision. Mm-hmm. Retribution?
Yeah.
Or live to fight another day?
There's no retribution on this players on this team. Who's going to be the retribution guy?
That's a good point.
Yeah. I think Boss, you know, that's a good prediction that Marchand's going to do something like that. But yeah, I think this series go back and forth. I have a hard time seeing. Toronto hasn't won two games in a row since like early March. Why is it going to start now?
I think that at home, I think it's going to go to OT. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be super close.
Yep.
I think in OT, you can never really predict what's going to happen. I just have a feeling the Leafs are starting to come into their own. Like they're hitting a bit of a stride. They had the bad game in game two, but they played them very well in games one and three.
They did.
And if Matthews trends up, and I think he's going to, then I'm going to say Leafs. I think the Leafs are going to walk out of game four with a 3-1 lead.
Oh, that'd be glorious.
And I picked them to win in six.
Yeah.
Because I think the talent is just superior. And Freddie Anderson's been out playing Rask.
Yep.
And as you said yourself, he has to do that. And if he does that, they can win.
Yeah, 100%. Can't wait for next week, Bob. Enjoy the end of your fast, and I do hope you don't have a chicken dog on Sunday.
I don't think so. I think I'll probably be all ham all the time. I should live tweet it.
You should.
I'm going to live tweet my Easter dinner.
Yeah, just send photos of what you're eating and get Sandra to send photos of you like splayed out on the couch, you know, as your daughter's patting your belly.
Sometimes she walks up to me and she can't do it now because my tummy's gone down, but she'll just walk up to me and pat my stomach and go, tummy.
That cannot be more masculating.
It's the worst.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matthew.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.